Intel apologizes after banning supplies from China's Xinjiang region. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The U.S. chipmaker has issued an apology on its WeChat social media account in China. That's after controversy over the company's decision to tell suppliers not to source materials from the country's Xinjiang region. The U.S. says genocide is being committed against Uyghur Muslims there, but Beijing denies any wrongdoing. Intel said it's sorry for distress caused to its, quote, esteemed customers, partners, and the Chinese public. And it said it was trying to comply with a new U.S. law banning imports from that region. The BBC's Stephen McDonnell has more on that story from Beijing.
Some of the outrage, at least, is kind of manufactured here. So it's not hard for the party to drum up outrage about anything, really, and even just sort of party apparatchiks getting onto social media and drumming up outrage. So it really is difficult to know what's genuinely people being upset and how much of it is just Communist Party organized hysteria, I guess, to put pressure on Intel to get them to change the way they're operating.
And it is important for Intel to remain in good standing, I suppose, isn't it? Because the company does have a fairly large presence in China. It is an important country for them.
Yeah, I mean, Intel has at least 10,000 employees in China, assembly work, test sites and the like. So it is a big source of business for the company. But, you know, it is interesting because this was kind of internal memo to its suppliers saying, don't buy stuff from Xinjiang, and trying to now explain that it's just trying to stay in keeping with what's required under now U.S. law for this U.S. company.
The BBC's Stephen McDonnell for us in Beijing. Thanks for breaking this down.
No worries.
Checking the numbers now, global benchmarks are ticking higher again this morning ahead of the holiday break. That's amid reports the Omicron coronavirus variant may be less severe than first feared. The Pan-European Stock 600 index is up about 0.5%, following momentum in Asia, where benchmarks ended up in the 0.3% to 0.8% range. To Afghanistan now, where the U.S. has eased restrictions on humanitarian assistance after the U.N. Security Council voted to allow more aid into the Taliban-controlled country. The BBC's Sukundar Kamani explains how that could help address a looming crisis there, where millions of people are on the brink of starvation.
Hospitals across Afghanistan have seen a sharp rise in severely malnourished children, with poor families often only able to feed them plain bread and tea. Even before the Taliban took over, much of the country was struggling to survive. Now that struggle has become even harder. We're here because of poverty and unemployment, says one woman with her child on the malnutrition ward of a hospital in central Afghanistan. I sold everything I had to buy medicine. We don't even have any food at home. But there's no shortage of food in Afghanistan's markets. This is an economic crisis. International funding used to account for around 75% of the government's public spending. That stopped when the Taliban came to power. Public sector workers have at best only received their salaries on a couple of occasions over the past 6 months. Nearly $10 billion of Afghanistan's foreign reserves were frozen and are currently the subject of court proceedings in the United States by families of 9/11 victims, leading to tight restrictions on bank withdrawals. Humanitarian aid agencies and the United Nations are on the ground and have stepped in to pay healthcare staff, for example. But their work has been made more complicated by the shortage of cash. This UN Security Council resolution aims to reassure banks they can transfer money to the country. That should help charities, but they're warning in such an aid-dependent economy, emergency assistance can only go so far.
That's the BBC's Sukundar Kamani reporting from Kabul there. The metaverse can be a complicated thing to wrap your mind around, a bit of virtual reality mixed with augmented reality. It's thought to be the next big thing in tech, and U.S. tech giants have been investing heavily in it. Even South Korea is looking to enter this digital universe, as the BBC's Mariko Oi reports.
Imagine Seoul in the metaverse, where your digital self can shop, eat, meet up with friends in the digital streets of the city. The pandemic has prompted the Seoul government to invest $35 million into making it a reality. But what can people do in the metaverse that they can't in the real world? I put that question to Chung Kyung Lee from the Seoul Metropolitan Government.
Instead of having to visit a city hall, an AI public servant will help residents in the metaverse. People can ask questions of the real world and solve problems.
Some of this is already happening. In South Korea, digital humans populate gaming, entertainment and home shopping, and some of them have become big stars. Vive Studios, which made the news when they recreated a virtual daughter to help her mother grieve over her death, have launched their first digital human.
엄마, 사랑해.
The company's chief executive, Stanley Kim, believes that even deceased humans could come back to life in the metaverse.
In the next 3 to 5 years, virtual influencers will be created perfectly with 3D. As technology advances, mothers, fathers, and family members, they can also be restored through this technology.
The potential is huge. South Korea's Zepeto was launched just 3 years ago and now has 250 million users. Fashion has been a big draw, with some creators becoming designers in the real world, making 5-6-figure incomes.
As with every new wave of technology, control and regulations are bound to follow.
Rudy Lee is the chief strategy officer at Zepeto.
What's really important is for the regulators to use this a lot more and have a lot of dialogues with operators like us, as well as the users.
Here in South Korea, even presidential candidates campaign on Zepeto. So while the metaverse is still taking shape in bits and pieces, it's already starting to have some real-world impact.
That's the BBC's Mariko Oi reporting from the metaverse there and in London. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.